45 minutes lectures and 15 minutes in between breaks. The breaks in between. I think you are welcome with the questions in between. Yeah.
Yes.
No problem. At the end, you will have a short quiz about the study. Yeah.
So this lecture was originally prepared for 2 hours. I had this lecture in Slovenian, but 2 hours is probably not enough. So I decided to have 3 times 45 minutes. We should end at noon with the lecture, and afterwards we have a short quiz. A short quiz mainly to have a feedback from the audience, so that I at least know a little bit whether the audience understands what I'm talking about or does not understand anything. Or maybe it's too easy and the audience understands everything. I don't know that. So I need that feedback from the audience. That's the purpose of the quiz at the end. So what am I going to talk about is noise in radio communication. This is not no longer a very scientific task. It's a very commercial task. So, we engineers, I'm an engineer, I'm not a scientist. We engineers have to fight for the last fraction of a decibel to be able to sell our designs. We are operating really against tight limits of Mother Nature, and we have to think really what we are doing. So, talking about noise, what is noise? Well, physicists have their own ideas what is noise, and they frequently disagree what they think about. So, if I reference to famous scientists 90 years ago, quantum theory was at that time at its beginnings, and very famous people like Albert Einstein disagreed about many things about this. What I can say for us engineers, what is the meaning of the quantum theory? Well, we do have random signals in nature that affect the performance of our equipment. And these random signals are all consequences of the quantum theory, or the quantum nature of the physical physics. But we are not going to deal with quantum theory at all. We are only going to look at the macroscopic effects. And the macroscopic effects of the quantum theory, we call them noise. Here again, I want to tell that I'm an engineer here, and as an engineer, I fight for the last fraction of the decibel, while physicists are happy to get any result they get from their experiment. And they don't really bother if the result is 10 to the power of minus 22 or 10 to the power of plus 22. They don't really bother about much. They are happy to get the result. While me as engineer, I have to fight for the last percent of the performance or the last percent of a decibel to be able to sell my equipment. That's a big difference. So how does noise look like in communication? In communications? Well, in electrical communications, I can say that I have mainly 2 kinds of noise. I have thermal noise, and this is this orange line here, and I have shock noise. So thermal noise is due to the movement of charges, due to thermal movement. Shock noise is really, could also be called granulation noise. So our signals, even our useful signals, are not some kind of continuous signals, but they are made of individual photons, and when the photon energy gets large, also this noise is growing. Noise that is flat with frequency, we call it white noise. Noise that grows the noise power proportional to the frequency, we call it blue noise. The term noise is mainly governed by the Boltzmann constant to get the noise spectral density of the thermal noise. The shot noise is governed by the Planck constant that gives the energy of the photon, and that's a measure of the granulation noise here we're going to get. Also, physicists used to write frequency with the letter F in the radio range, and with the Greek letter ni at optical frequency. This is just what they are accustomed to use. There is a region in between where both noises coexist. But this region, the so-called terahertz region, is technically very difficult to achieve anything in this region here. So this is, from practical, commercial point of view, this region is not very important to us. The important thing to understand is that the sum of both noises is a continuous monotonic curve, so the derivative is always at the same side. So there is nothing strange happening in between the two regions. Just the terminal noise is slowly superseded by the shock noise. That's all that happens. What are we going to be interested in is our thermal noise in the radio range, because I'm going to talk about noise in radio, not about noise in optics. That's a completely different subject. The origin. How do we compute the noise power? The noise power we compute is taking the bandwidth multiplied by the spectral noise spectral density of some particular noise. In the case of radio noise, this is Boltzmann constant time temperature. Up to the frequencies we are going to use, about 100 gigahertz, this is almost constant. At room temperature, not at very low temperatures. On the other hand, the noise spectral density of shot noise is equal to the energy of the photon. So this is proportional to frequency. It's no longer flat, it's proportional to frequency. Going forward to see what is going on, how much noise is picked up by our system, we can look at the black body. Black body has a reflectivity of zero, so it absorbs any incident radiation, but also radiates very much. It radiates more than any other kind of body, the black body. And in physics we have the Planck law of black body radiation that gives the spectral brightness of such a black body. The Planck law is a complete law. It includes many laws, many different laws derived by different physicists inside. And what we are really going to do, we are going to do now the derivation of the Planck law in the reverse direction. We are going to, we are trying to compute the noise power we get out of the Planck law, while physicists did really the opposite. They measured the power, the noise power, and they tried to derive the Planck law out of it. At low frequencies, when the photon energy is much smaller than the thermal energy, we may use the Rayleigh-Jeans approximation. So this, the exponent here will be very small, so this exponent function can be replaced by a much smaller expression, and then in this case the Planck constant cancels out, and we are only left with the Boltzmann constant in the Rayleigh-Jeans approximation for the spectral brightness of our black body at radio frequencies, at relatively low frequencies. Of course, this is not valid. This is not valid at high frequencies, because we know that in the real world, the thermal noise decays. Decays as the Planck law says. So this decay is given by this denominator here. But we neglect this at very low frequencies because the exponent is very small. And we do now our derivation in the reverse direction. So we are trying to see how much power our antenna is collecting from a radiating black body at a temperature different from zero. What we do, we use our Rayleigh-Jeans approximation we had here for spectral brightness, and we have to integrate this. We have to see how much power is radiated to the solid angle given by the size of our antenna, by the effective area of our antenna. And since this is a coherent receiving antenna, this effective area is a function of the direction of theta and pi of the two angles. On the other hand, we have to integrate, we have to sum the contributions not just of one small area of this black body, but we have to sum over the whole black body that's radiating. So here what we do, we actually replace things in the reverse order. We replace this element of area here with an element of solid angle. Solid angle as seen from the antenna. And in the other way we replace this solid angle, this area is radiating, with the effective area of the antenna. We try to reorder our results. Something very important, the Planck law gives the total radiation. But the total radiation at large different distances, beyond the Rayleigh distance, supports two modes, two polarizations. Our antenna is only able to pick up one polarization. That's the reason why we have to take only one half of this power. One half of this power will be available on this one single one. The antenna itself, the bandwidth of the antenna may be limited, or we may have a bandpass filter here, but this is usually already built in antenna, so we cannot receive all of the frequencies, but just the frequencies the antenna is built for. This defines the bandwidth. If we sum everything, we come down to these integrals. What we actually do, the power we receive is equal to the bandwidth, it's proportional to the bandwidth, to the Boltzmann constant, and to something that has units of temperature here. And we call this quantity, this ratio of two integrals, the antenna temperature. It's written here. Here, what we actually do, we actually sum the temperature of our black body. This may not be constant across the area of the black body. And we weigh it with the radiation pattern, the power radiation pattern of the antenna. If f of theta and phi is the amplitude radiation pattern, then f of theta and phi squared, and absolute value, this is the power radiation pattern. We weigh this temperature. Something important to notice is that this antenna temperature is defined strictly for a lossless antenna. In the case we have losses inside the antenna, these losses eat some of the collected power, they dissipate some of it, but they also add their own black body radiation. So this is a much more complicated case, and leave that for the next hour, not for now. So we miss our work with the simple problem of a lossless antenna. So, having a look at the result we got here, what does this result mean, actually? Well, the first thing we see from the result here is that this antenna temperature is not a property of the antenna. Of a lossless antenna. A lossless antenna cannot radiate anything, cannot generate any noise here, absolutely. But this antenna with its radiation beam, it sees some black body. This black body, if it's lossy, we have zero reflection from it, includes resistors. And these resistors are actually the ones that do radiate power. And this power is just collected by our antenna and transformed in a different mode. Here we have a free space, one polarization, a free space mode. Here we have a transmission line that also supports one mode. So the antenna is here just a mode transformer, nothing more than that. But it does not add anything to radiation as long as it is lossless, or the bandpass filter is lossless. Are we able to measure this power? This power should be very low. Well, with good instruments, we are able to detect, measure this power. In a good receiver, this power collected by the antenna is also a limiting performance to our radio link. It's going to be the noise, our signal-to-noise separation. Anything that we collect here, should connect here to our antenna. We should also know that this thing is probably not an absolute zero temperature. This is not a zero temperature. So this load here is also radiating. It's radiating some thermal power, and this thermal power actually hits our black body and heats up this black body. It's transformed into heat back in this black body. So, talking about our circuit we have here, experiment, we can see that the black body is transferring its heat through radiation to our antenna and to our load. And our load is transferring its heat through radiation towards our black body. So our simplified diagram is this one here. We have two resistors, maybe at different temperatures. This resistor is radiating heat towards this resistor, and this resistor here is radiating its own heat towards this resistor. So thermal radiation, actually what it does in physics, it implies calls for thermal equilibrium. So if this one is warmer, it's going to transfer more heat here than it's receiving back. So this one if it's a higher temperature, it's going to cool down and it's going to warm up this resistor as long as the two resistors do not achieve the same temperature. In fact, our resistor, if it is not absolute zero, we can rewrite it as a cold resistor that does not create any noise, connected in series with a voltage source that has some certain noise voltage on it. Noise being a random signal, usually we can only talk about its effective voltage it generates. So, effective voltage is related to the amount of heat this voltage is going to generate. We don't know what the instantaneous value of this voltage is, because this is a random value. Now, in this drawing here, we see a nice explanation also of the radiation resistance of the antenna. This from electromagnetic theory is not very clear. In electromagnetic theory, we see the samples. If we connect a transmitter to our antenna, the antenna is generating radiation, and in order to support this power, the antenna has to present some real resistance to the generator. But we don't know where this real resistance really comes from. In the case of the antenna seeing the black body, we see where this radiation resistance of antenna is really located. It's located inside the black body. So now we understand if I connect the generator here, The antenna is radiating its power, the generator sees the radiation resistance, but the thing that's actually being warmed up by this radio frequency power, it is black body. This black body may be infinitely away. Maybe black sky. Black sky is a black body. Even black sky is not an absolute zero. Some foolish man 14 billion years ago blew up the universe, and the echo of that blast can still be seen today, still be detected today. It's quite a low temperature. So I will talk about that later. What is our antenna seeing in the real world? It sees many different targets. Not all of these targets are black bodies. Okay, vegetation is a good black body. Cold sky is also a good black body. But things like lakes, water surfaces, these are perfect mirrors. A mirror has no trigger. A mirror only reflects incident radiation. We also have objects that are partially gray bodies, we could call them. They partially reflect the radiation. Their gamma is not equal to zero, but is also equal to one, like in the case of the lake. And we have to sum the contributions of all these sources to get our antenna temperature in the real world. How much noise is collected in our antenna? This is important for us in communications. How much noise are we going to get? We see that many of the items which we have here are at close to room temperature. So room temperature 290 Kelvin is 70 degrees centigrade. It's close to the room temperature here. So we are not far away from that. So 290 degrees is specified as the standard room temperature. 290 Kelvin. We have things that are much colder than this, like the sky, maybe very cold. The sky may be very cold, maybe just around 10 Kelvin, and this 10 Kelvin is given by, it's a sum of different effects. There are maybe a few little stars we can see, even in the darkest part of the sky. We have the background radiation from the explosion 14 billion years ago, and that's about 3 Kelvin. Also, the atmosphere is adding something. We have objects that are much brighter than room temperature. For instance, the sun, we usually say that the sun is at 6,000 Kelvin. 6,000 Kelvin is the temperature of the sun at very high frequencies, optical frequencies. But at radio frequencies, the sun is much, much warmer. I wrote here 1 million Kelvin, but 1 million Kelvin is only valid at frequencies of, say, a few gigahertz. If we go down with frequency, the sun is even brighter at lower frequencies. And it's less bright at visible frequencies. So celestial objects are a difficult item. Here, if we look at things, what happens with frequencies, in the scale of frequency, going from 100 megahertz, 1 gigahertz, 10 gigahertz, 100 gigahertz, 1000 gigahertz. So we have most of our radio range here, and part of the terahertz range here. What's going on here? We have at about 3 Kelvin, we have the cosmic background. This was the explosion 14 billion years ago. We have a noticeable contribution from the atmosphere. The atmosphere is not perfectly transparent, but at microwave frequencies it's quite transparent. In the terahertz range, the atmosphere becomes opaque. So the terahertz range, if you look at the dotted line here, here, here. This dotted line almost reaches the 290 Hz of room temperature because the atmosphere is not transparent. What the upper curve tells, the upper curve tells the whole noise contribution to our radio ring, because if we add attenuation in the atmosphere, the apparent temperature is even higher. So, at low frequencies, below 1 GHz, the contribution of celestial sources, even if we are not pointing to the sun, cannot be negated. In the sky we have many distributed noise sources, and most of these distributed areas are located in the plane of our galaxy, in the plane of the universe. Most of these sources are located. If we go at right angle, if we look at right angle to the plane of our galaxy, we get about 10 times less noise, but there is still quite an amount of celestial noise available at low frequencies outside. We may have some quite narrow lines, like the hydrogen line or the OH line, hydrogen 1.4 GHz, OH line 1.6 GHz. But these are not really important because these lines are very, very narrow, they are not quite important in communication, as is the broadband, non-thermal radiation from the celestial sources, mainly our galaxies, mainly our Milky Way, also other galaxies, mainly, and the center of our galaxy is particularly active. There are also other active areas, but the center of the galaxy is the one that's most active. So, what is the impact of a celestial source on the temperature of our antenna? Say we use the antenna for satellite communication, and we point our antenna to the sky, and now we have this problem, we have very bright object in the beam of our antenna, and this may raise the temperature. What is actually the effect of such a celestial source? Well, usually the effect is not very bad, because the directivity of our antenna is not very large, so the solid angle of our antenna beam, or talking about conventional angular diameter of the antenna, is usually much larger than this celestial source. If they are not distributed like the galaxy is a distributed source, we have radiation from elsewhere. While most very hot things like the sun, or point sources like the center of our galaxy, Sagittarius A, or some very bright object in the sky, like the radio galaxy, Cygnus A. It's a radio galaxy that's 200 million light years away from us. It's still causing lots of noise. All this look for our antenna like point sources. And if the solid angle of the source is much smaller than the angle of our antenna, we can make an approximation for our complicated integral. And we can simply take that here our source is at the maximum, pointed the antenna to the sun at the maximum frame. And all the rest of our pattern sees the cold sky. The calculation in this case becomes very, very simple. We can replace this with the definition of the directivity of our antenna, this integral here. This integral here is just a constant, it's just one. And we see that the contribution of the sun is not very large. Here the angular diameter of the sun is half a degree, while our antenna is some 10 degrees. And the contribution of the sun, even though the sun is 1 million Kelvin here, the contribution to the antenna temperature is just 470 Kelvin. Well, we have the 10 Kelvin of the background seen by the antenna. Well, in the real world example, the antenna noise will be higher, not due to the sun,
But due to the antenna side lobes, here we had a very simple antenna with no side lobes. Such antennas do not exist in practice, antennas have many side lobes. And these side lobes pick up ground noise, ground vibration. And this is what is raising up the antenna noise. Not really the celestial sources, but the things in the neighborhood of the antenna, so the ground picking up the ground noise. So let's see how now the whole the noise calculations apply to our communication problem. We have a radio receiver that has an antenna, has an amplifier, and has a bandpass filter in all communication. So the bandpass is defined by the kind of modulation we have, the frequency we are using. We need an amplifier signal. We need an antenna to pick up a signal from free space and convert them to a mode propagating in a transmission line. What we are mainly interested in the communication is the signal-to-noise ratio we can get at the output. This is signal power divided by noise power at the output. So the signal comes from free space, is picked up by antenna, it amplified by amplifier, and the signal should not be really affected much by the bandpass filter, because the bandpass filter is matched to our signal. The bandwidth matches, so the bandpass should allow our signal to go to the system. On the other hand, we have noise that is collected by our antenna, and this is the antenna noise temperature, okay. And we have noise that is generated inside the amplifying device. All amplifiers, for radio frequencies, for optical frequencies, all amplifiers always produce some noise on their own. And this noise is added to the other signals at the output terminals of our amplifier. Now, for our convenience, we try to reduce all signals and noises to the input of the amplifier, to the input of our receiver. Why we do that? We try to do that because the gain of the receiver may be very large. The gain may not be even stable, may change with the supply voltage of the receiver, with the temperature of the receiver. An automatic gain control built inside the receiver may change this gain. So this gain is something variable here. We would prefer not to talk about the signal powers here because these things change. We would prefer to talk about the signal powers here, even though not of all of them are present. Here at the input we have the signal power, we have the antenna temperature, but we cannot say anything about the amplifier. This may be present or may not be present, depending on the amplifier design. Some amplifiers even do radiate a huge amount of noise out through the antenna, but we are not concerned about that. We are concerned about what is getting to the output, not what is being radiated out of the antenna. If we can reduce the noise of the amplifier by radiating it out of the antenna, that's good for us. We like it. We don't bother if we disturb someone. That's the reason why we reduce all figures to the input of the receiver, and we call this temperature of the receiver. So the noise generated inside the receiver we express as a temperature, a thermal noise source added to the input of the receiver, not to the output, but to the input, because the output, I told you, this gain is something that's variable. It's something that's uncertain. And we see that the signal-to-noise ratio that we can obtain, also the output, but it's, now we are calculating with the input because it cancels out the gain, both in the numerator and the denominator. We cancel it in the numerator, we cancel it in the denominator, so we don't have the final expression. And we have the signal power divided by the bandwidth of our signal, delta F, Boltzmann constant, and sum of all temperatures. Just to remember what in the range of the Rudra Kachana. Our apparent noise at the input is this noise at the output divided by the gain. But this is just apparent. I told you this is not real. In reality, we have just an antenna noise gain, and we have, may have some noise getting out of the amplifier, but this is not related to the noise that's getting at the output. All noise signals are uncorrelated. So, if you have generators that are not synchronized, then the power addition theorem applies in electrical engineering. So we just sum the powers of these different noise sources. Or in other words, we sum the temperatures. We are not summing the amplitudes of the signal because the signal generators are not synchronized one to the other. Even if they produce noise power of the same frequency band, they are not correlated, so noise temperatures applies. Okay, receivers may have more than one amplifier station. In the case we have more stages, we can talk about the gains of the individual stages and the noise temperatures of the individual stages. These noise temperatures are always intended as being reduced to the input of the particular stage. So this is now T1 is at this input, T2 is at this input, T3 is at this input. Now, if we sum the contributions of noise output of our receiver, we see that the antenna noise goes through all three amplifiers. Also, the noise of the first amplifier, if it's defined at this input, it's amplified by three stages. But the noise of the second stage is only amplified by the second and third stage. And the noise of the third stage is only amplified by the third stage itself. Now, if we try to recalculate the noise power at the input, we divide all this with the gain of our chain. And in fact, we could talk about the temperature of our receiver. The temperature of our receiver includes contributions from all stages, considering the lossless filter. But the most important is the contribution of the first stage. Because the second stage is not getting amplified by the first stage, so we divide it by the gain of the first stage. And if we reduce the temperature of the third stage to the input of the first stage, then we have to divide it by the gains of the first and second stages. So in the case of building a receiver, the most important noise contribution is only the first stage. The subsequent stages add less and less noise because the signal is getting amplified. The signal is getting amplified, so we don't see much noise coming from these stages. So, designing a receiver, the most important choice is the choice of the first device. What frequently happens in practice is that we build a receiver out of identical building blocks. Say we have an IC technology that that produces transistors that have a certain gain of an element and temperature of an element. And we use many of these blocks, the same building blocks in, say, an integrated receiver. This is a monolithic integrated receiver. Then an important measure is the temperature we can achieve for an infinite chain of identical temperatures. This is more important than the temperature of the individual element, especially if the gain of the individual element is quite low. So, if people were clever and they were making these simple calculations with noise temperatures, I could end my discussion right here. Yes. Unfortunately, people are stupid. They try to invent stupid things and then they use to make wrong calculations with
unit of measurement is called the noise figure. The noise figure is supposed to be a property of an amplifier. And those engineers that claim that they know how to make calculations with the noise figure, well, the noise figure, they say the noise figure is a degradation. This is a number larger than one. Is a degradation of the signal-to-noise ratio. If we know the signal-to-noise ratio of the input of the amplifier, if we know the signal-to-noise ratio of the output of the amplifier, this usually gets degraded in an amplifier because the amplifier adds its own noise. And the ratio of the two is our noise figure. This is what is written in textbooks. Well, I say, idiots write textbooks. That's my point. Because if we derive what this is, if we look at the temperature, noise temperature here, what's provided by the antenna, if we look at the noise temperature provided by the receiver, and if we develop this equation, if we cancel out whatever is equal here, so we have gain here, we can gain here, in this double ratio, we can cancel it out. We have signal power here, we can cancel it out. We have the Boltzmann constant twice, we can cancel it out. What we are left with this expression here. So the noise figure is 1 plus temperature of the receiver divided by the temperature of the antenna. Why is this stupid? Because we said that the noise figure is a property of an amplifier. How does this amplifier know what antenna we connected it to in its input? This amplifier cannot know what is the antenna temperature. Because if the noise figure is a property of the amplifier, the amplifier does not know anything about the antenna. And it does not know where this antenna is pointed. So this is silly. But idiots write this in their textbooks. Now, because we have so many idiotic textbooks around, there is nothing but we have to find a way in the middle to talk, to be able to talk to these people that insist on their definition of the noise figure. We are trying to find some solution, and our solution is to take the antenna temperature equal to our reference temperature, 290 Kelvin. So we say our antenna is pointing to a black body at room temperature. This is the only thing we can do, actually, to get out of this ridiculous definition. And then we define our noise figure as 1 plus temperature of the receiver divided by our reference temperature. And this is by definition 290 Kelvin. And we have also the opposite relationship. So we just made our life complicated with this new quantity F. There's nothing, it tells exactly the same thing as the temperature of the receiver. It's exactly the same physical quantity, but described in a different way. The noise figure is a ratio without any units, and the ratio without any units, engineers like to express them in decibels. So noise figure is frequently written in logarithmic units, in decibels. It is not written in noise figure is usually not written as a pure ratio. But be careful, most of formulas, we are also going to use some formulas in the next 2 hours of my lecture, use the noise figure written as a ratio, not in logarithmic units. So we have to be careful when do we have to make the conversion from logarithmic units to linear ratio or from linear ratio to logarithmic. We have to be very careful about the units. So, for those of us that are lazy and do not have the calculator on hand on every occasion, this nomograph is very useful. So, to convert the noise figure in decibels into noise temperature in Kelvin or vice versa. So, having these two formulas plotted in a useful way, also in a useful range, we go from very good receivers, kind of like maybe 20 Kelvin of noise temperature, up to 10,000 Kelvin of noise temperature, and have the corresponding noise figure, say from 0.2, 0.3 decibels up to 50 decibels. This is a useful range.
All of this related to our definition of the noise reference room temperature of 290 Kelvin. Now I have time to make a break. I am going to continue exactly at 15 to recover the delay of some of you.